Morning all. So, the topic for today is perseverance. And I thought it timely just to make a brief reference to the Queen in recognition of the fact that when it comes to perseverance or endurance, this is a woman who, has endured 70 years of service. And after her passing last weekend, there are a lot of tributes, of course, but also lesser known stories about her life and how she helped people. And Maddie shared with me a story this week that came from the autobiography of a guy called David Knott, who's he's a trauma surgeon and had been in many war zones in his life and not always come out of them like 100%. I think he suffered from PTSD after he went to Aleppo in Syria. And after that time, he actually had lunch with the Queen. I'm not quite sure how that happened. Anyway, I'll pick up the story as he writes it. He says, "I don't know why it happened then, or why it should have been the Queen who breached the dam. Perhaps it's because she was the mother of the nation, and I'd lost my own mother. My bottom lip started to go, and all I wanted to do was burst into tears. But I held myself together as best I could. I hoped she wouldn't ask me another question about Aleppo. I knew if she did, I would completely lose control. She looked at me quizzically and touched my hand. She then had a quiet word with one of the courtiers who pointed to a silver box in front of her. I watched as she opened the box, which was full of biscuits. 'These are for the dog,' she said, breaking one of the biscuits in two and giving me half. We fed the biscuits to the corgis under the table, and for the rest of the lunch, she took the lead and chatted about her dogs, how many she had, what their names were, how old they were. All the while we were stroking and petting them, and my anxiety and distress drained away. 'There,' the Queen said, 'that's so much better than talking, isn't it?'" Now, that's not actually relevant to what I'm talking about today, but it did show the caring side of the Queen, and it involves dogs, so it's good by me. Having said that, I'm now going to talk to you for the next 30 minutes. And we're going to start off in, there's one passage I really want to look at today, which is Hebrews 12. Can we get the screen up on my back so I can look at that as well? Thank you. So this is the verses that I want to focus on today from Hebrews 12, verses 1 to 3. I'll read this through and then we'll go through it in some detail. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." So that you'll not grow weary and lose heart. That's the bit that really jumped out at me when I read that a few weeks back. And in some ways, that passage is almost the center of the book of Hebrews, because Hebrews is a letter that's addressed to people who are losing heart, who are losing faith and walking away from Christianity. And that's really what I want to look at today. How do we persevere? Now also, it's World Pathfinder Day, so Pathfinders, happy World Pathfinder Day, and thank you for taking our service today. And I hadn't actually chosen the theme with the Pathfinders in mind, it just sort of worked out that way, but I thought it was an appropriate subject for that, because Pathfinders does a lot of things for the young people who get involved, but when you're on something like, say, the Overland Hike, and you're 3 days in, and the food's running low, and it's snowing, you'll learn something about perseverance in those circumstances. Also, the theme for World Pathfinder Day is change the world. And as I was thinking about that, well, you don't really change the world without perseverance. I was thinking of people like William Wilberforce, who campaigned against slavery for 20 years, and Martin Luther King Jr., who campaigned for civil rights until he was killed, for 13 years. Also thought of Winston Churchill, who was the Queen's first Prime Minister. One of the speeches that he gave, I think to his old school, he had this memorable quote of, "Never give in, Never give in. Never, never, never. End of quote. So today from this verse, I'm specifically talking about persevering in the faith. What differences are there between someone who perseveres in the faith and someone who walks away from that faith? Many of us will know someone, a friend, a family member, who has done just that. Someone who for part of their life was a Christian, but now not so much or not at all. And maybe even there's someone here today who has been coming to church, but for whatever reason is also thinking, I'm not really sure if this is for me, I'm not sure if I believe. So that's, it's a heavy subject, but it's an important one too. As evidenced by the fact that this whole book of Hebrews exists to address just this. I was listening to an interview recently with a man who was a Navy chaplain. He joined the Navy as a young man, and at the time he was an atheist, but he became a Christian through the influence of a good friend. And he was so drawn to faith that he underwent theology training, became a minister so that he could become a chaplain in the armed forces. So someone who ministers to other people in that situation. And it was a job that he held, a role he held for decades. But along the way, doubts started to come into his mind and ultimately stopped believing, and he no longer considers himself a believer. In fact, he would identify as an atheist. Now, it's not really in the scope of this sermon today to discuss all the reasons why people lose their faith. And in fact, I'm really more interested in the flip side of what makes people persevere. Because in some ways, knowing what is arrayed against us, that's the more remarkable story. But I do want to touch on one of the big reasons that particular man lost faith, and it was over the question of suffering. Being in the armed forces, he was, of course, exposed to some pretty bad situations of human suffering at the hands of other people. And so the question arose in his mind, which is a question that has arisen from generation after generation. When bad things are going on, when people's lives are destroyed, where is God? How can there be a good God who allows that? And it's a completely understandable question. And there are no simple answers to that. But I did want to say, because it's relevant to where I'm heading, that the very question being asked there, even before we get to an answer, already tells us something. The very act of asking that question tells us something. The fact that we as people ask that question of why is this happening, how can this be, means we already have a very strong sense of how the world ought to be, but it isn't. The world is unfair. It should be fair. The world is unjust. It should be just. The world is cruel. It shouldn't be that way. Now, if this world has only ever been unfair, cruel, and unjust, where do we get those ideas from? Why would we have this idea of a better, fairer system if it had never been that way? There's something built into us that has a sense of what should be, what ought to be. Where does that sense come from? How do we see beyond what is to how we think it should be if it has never been that way? Now, that doesn't stop the question or refute it, but to me it's interesting that the question itself indicates something about us, that we do see beyond what is, we have a sense of something more. And that leads me back to the Hebrews verse for today. And I'm just going to start with this bit, Hebrews 12, verse 1 and a bit. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. So we've got the word therefore, so that connects us back to what the writer was just saying. So this is Hebrews 12, so we have to go back to Hebrews 11. Now, Hebrews 11 is a chapter known as the faith chapter because it lists great people of in Old Testament times who were great people of faith. Now, why were they great people of faith? They were people of great faith because they saw beyond what is or what was to see something that wasn't apparent but was nonetheless true. So Hebrews 11:1 says, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. So, for example, it lists Noah building an ark for a flood that no one around him saw coming. You see, Abraham, leaving the home that he knew for a place he didn't know, in the hope of establishing a nation, a people of God. We see Moses giving up a comfy life as the son of Pharaoh's daughter to identify with his downtrodden people, a decision that decades down the line would lead to the liberation of those same people. And there are many others named in the chapter, all living in ways where they were looking beyond what was apparent to see something that was not apparent and acting on that vision, and as a result having a dramatic impact on the people around them and indeed on history. And just to clarify, when Hebrews 12 says we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, that doesn't mean that this is a bunch of people all gathered around somehow looking down on us and watching what we're doing. They're witnesses in the sense of, as Jay Moffat says, it's what we see in them, not what they see in us, that is the writer's main point. So the writer is saying, look at these people. Look at Moses and Noah and Abraham and so on. See how they lived. See how they thought even. See the faith they showed. They're worthy people to follow the example of. And so the first point of how do we persevere and not lose heart is, who influences you? No man is an island. We're exposed to different worldviews every day through so many different avenues, and they affect us and they change us. The point of this verse is that it points us to people of faith that are worth spending time with, worth reading about, because they represent this different point of view to what the world generally represents. When we read Scripture, when we meditate on what is recorded there, we counterbalance what the world says with images of what faith looks like. So the first point of how we persevere is to identify who influences us and to ramp up our exposure to the faithful influences. Now the next part of the verse, going on a little bit. So, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Okay, now I'll admit that I'm a bit biased towards this verse because I love running. Let me go to the next photo. This is my Where's Wally picture from last year's half marathon. That's me finishing. I was looking around at the characters in this story, and I was looking at this guy here. He's just realised he's in the MCG and he's still got half a tank of gas, and he's gone, I should have gone harder about 10k ago. He's finishing with a flurry. So I love running. I'm very devoted to running. And any time a running analogy comes up in the Bible, I'm there for it. So what I want to do now is have a look at a guy who's really running, not me. I want to show you one of the greatest feats of running ever. Can we fire up the video clip and have a bit of a look at this? I'm going to talk you through what's going on here. So what we see here is the great Eliud Kipchoge in the white with a bunch of guys helping him. And he's running a marathon. So he's running a marathon, so get comfy, this goes for about 2 hours. No, this is the last couple of minutes of it, really. What he's trying to do here is run a marathon in under 2 hours, which is absurd. It's completely ridiculous. And this is just the finishing stages of it. And what they've done is they've set up a course specifically for him to make this challenge. The guys with him are helping him. They're a team of runners who, and there's a few other teams of them, and they take it, I think, in 5K turns to run with him, because nobody can actually keep up with him for the whole spate of a marathon. So they'll roster their way through it. It's a nice flat course. It was in Vienna. Nice straight course, not a lot of turns. The weather conditions were good. For most of the race, there was a truck with a laser shining on the ground going at the exact right pace that he needed to run. And speaking of that pace, the pace that he's running is unbelievable. Like, I'm a pretty average runner, and when I race, over, say, 5 kilometres, I'm happy if I can run each K in about 5 minutes. He's running at sub-3-minute pace, not for 5Ks, for 42Ks. And he looks like that. Can we have the sound up now? Just have a bit of a listen to the...
happening on the streets of Vienna this morning. It's a Saturday run like we've never seen before. Listen at the noise, the crowd getting right behind him.
I'm not really showing this point, so there's two comments I want to make about this afterwards. But for the moment, I just want you to see what poetry in motion looks like.
On the moon in 1969.
He just has this beautiful, free-flowing running action. And what he's doing here is almost inconceivable.
Edmund Hillary, the first man to climb Everest in 1953.
He looks free. He looks amazing. I can't imagine what that feels like, but it's so impressive to view.
This humble farmer who used to run 2 miles to school every day and back. He used to go to the nearest town on his bike to sell milk at the local market. And now, through hard work and discipline, he's pointing. Come on, he says. Eliud Kipchoge has the hand of history on his shoulder. He has. Less than 200 meters to go. Eliud Kipchoge, let's keep an eye on the clock. Into the final 20 seconds. Eliud Kipchoge. On his shoulder. 140. 140, the unofficial time.
There's his wife.
Eliud Kipchoge storms into the history books in Vienna. 159.40, the unofficial time. The first man to run a marathon in under 2 hours.
Okay, that'll probably do, thanks, Tom.
One final lung-busting strike.
So he did it. He broke the two-hour barrier for a marathon. Now, what does it take to be able to do that? It takes a lot of training. It takes a lot of discipline. I was looking at his training schedule just this morning to see what he does, and the amount of kilometres he runs every week is a lot. And one of his famous quotes about this is, I'm back at the start. Shall I scoot through? Oh, no, I won't. Somebody else is skipping through for me. Here we go. Eliud Kipchoge says, "Only the disciplined ones in life are free. If you are undisciplined, you are a slave to your moods and your passions." And he looks free. He is free because of his discipline. And this idea connects us back to the text. Throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles and run. Freedom is an interesting concept to wrestle with. You might think of freedom as, I want to be free, I want to be able to do anything I like. No rules, no restrictions. Turns out, that view of freedom can easily lead to restrictions that we don't actually want. If you think of the story of the prodigal son, he's a guy who asks his dad for his inheritance so he can go off and spend it on wild living. You know, so he takes all his money and he goes and parties and makes friends. And it's like, yeah, I'm free. Look at me. I can do whatever I want. But it's not long before the money has run out and he's feeding pigs for a job. And he's looking at their food going, that looks pretty tasty. Is he free? Is he free in that situation? He started off that way, but he ended up in a miserable form of enslavement. There's a good quote on this from Tim Keller. He said, "Turns out freedom is not the absence of restrictions, but the presence of the right restrictions." And I think there's a lot in that. The right restrictions actually lead to greater freedom for us as people. Sin ensnares, other things hinder. To run the race marked out for us in terms of faith, those things need to diminish. If a lot of our time and attention is devoted to the shiny things of the world, or just to outright sin, we make it hard for ourselves to run that race. To run free and easy takes discipline, takes training. The other thing that is relevant from the verse, which again was highlighted by the video, is, I'll just put little highlights in here. "And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." You'll notice that to break the record, they didn't just send Kipchoge out on his own. He had all these teams of runners running with him. As I say, I think they took it in turns, 5 or 10 Ks, but he ran with other people. And that's a weird thing about running, is that you run better when you run with others. You persevere better when you do it with others. Even though from a mechanical or physical point of view, you're basically doing exactly the same thing as if you were running alone. You do run better when you run with others. And you can see the guys who are running with him, how much they're enjoying helping him and how much they celebrate with what he is actually achieving. And that's the second point about perseverance. Who are you running with? This race marked out for us. Who are you running with? Now, there may be some drawbacks to being part of a Christian community because we're people and we don't always see eye to eye. But there's a major strength that comes from being in a Christian community too. I first came to this church 35 years ago, and I'm pretty sure the late Ray Chapman was preaching that day. I don't think I understood much of anything that happened that day. It was one of the first times I'd ever been to any kind of church. 7 years later, I got baptized. I made the cover of the record because I preached that day as well. And look at me, I'm still rabbiting on 28 years later. And look, it hasn't always been smooth sailing and a trouble-free ride, what race is. But when I look around this room, and when I think of the people who've been in this room with me over those decades, I see so many people who have run this race with me. People who've encouraged me. People who've helped me learn. Who've enlarged my understanding of God. People who've prayed for me when I needed it. People have been an example for me. People have taught me about how to live as a Christian, not even by what they said, but what they did. People have challenged me and helped me grow. People have shared my pain. People have celebrated with me. We run this race together. When we run together, we can persevere. We run better when we run together. Let us continue to encourage and support and help each other. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. So that's my second point. Who are you influenced by? Who are you running with? So that's the first verse covered. Only two more to go. And now we get to the really key element about perseverance. Verses 2 and 3. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Your eyes are going to be fixed on something. Fix on him. He's the author and perfecter of our faith. So the faith you have, that comes from him. The shaping, the perfecting of your faith, well, that's him too. And that's good reason to fix our eyes on him. But there's more than that. There's more than that. Look at how he persevered. He endured the cross, one of the most awful ways to die ever conceived. It was painful. It was excruciating in its torment. In fact, the very word excruciating has its origin in the Latin word for cross, crux. The word excruciating was invented to reflect how awful death on a cross was. And it wasn't just painful, it was shameful. It was a completely humiliating way to die. Your clothing was stripped away, you were nailed up high in a public place where everyone could see you, and you would be mocked by the people who passed by. And going into it, Jesus knew that would be the case. And I love the almost double negative in this verse. He scorned the shame of the cross. He saw the shame of the cross, didn't put him off. He scorned that shame. He endured it. He persevered. He had every opportunity to avoid it or be rescued from it, and he didn't. He persevered. He pushed through, he kept going. Was it hard to persevere? Absolutely. His physical pain, his emotional pain, combined with spiritual pain of being abandoned by his father, he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you abandoned me? And still, he persevered to the very end. Consider him. Such a great word, consider. It could also be translated as think over. Ponder. Because when we do that, we see not only a model of what it means to endure, to persevere when the going gets hard. We don't just see that. We also see why he did it. I read this quote from John Stott recently about substitution. The concept of substitution may be said then to lie at the heart of both sin and salvation. For the essence of sin is man substituting himself for God, while the essence of salvation is God substituting himself for man. Man asserts himself against God and puts himself where only God deserves to be. God sacrifices himself for man and puts himself where only man deserves to be. Man claims prerogatives which belong to God alone. God accepts penalties which belong to man alone. Why did he do it? He did it for us. The shame, the pain, the pure desolation of the cross. He did that for you and for me. Now, we can grow weary. We can lose heart. And the remedy is not new. But it's worth saying again and again and again. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Consider Jesus. Consider what he did, what he endured, and consider why he did it. When we do, above all other things, this gives us heart, gives us strength, and this enables us to persevere.